This is a reading of a lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Apocalypse of St. John. This is lecture 10, given in Nuremberg on the 27th of June, 1908. We have seen that in the Apocalypse of John, we have a description of what takes place in initiation, or rather the experience of one undergoing a Christian initiation. When in the final lectures, we shall have seen passing before our souls a review of the entire content of the Apocalypse, we shall still have to answer the question, what really is this document from an historical point of view? Why does such a document exist? But now, as we have reached the important point revealed in our last lecture, when our earth passes into a spiritual condition, though first of all into an astral condition, when certain remarkable beings appear in what has condensed in matter and split away from the normal progress of our earth evolution, it will be useful, before we proceed further, to make a general survey of certain things contained in the outline of our anthroposophical world conception. For you have seen that in all we have had to consider, certain numerical concepts play a role. Now we are about to form a conception of what the seven-headed and ten-horned beast is, and what the two-horned beast is. To begin with, we must find our bearings with regard to the outline of the evolution of the world. This runs its course in absolute conformity with certain numerical relations. The layman will be tempted to say, when he hears that the number seven and other numbers play such a great role in our studies, oh yes, these anthroposophists are dishing up those old superstitions connected with the number 7, 12, and so on. And when our contemporaries hear of something which proceeds regularly according to the number 7, they begin to speak of superstition, although they themselves are really living in exactly the same superstition with respect to something of which they do have some knowledge. For example, that the rainbow consists of 7 colors, the music scale of 7 tones, since the 8th is only a repetition of the 1st. And in many other realms one speaks of the number 7, and rightly so. In our study of the great cosmic relationships, we speak of the number 7 in no other sense than the physicist does when he speaks of the 7 colors, or in music of the 7 tones. For us, the number 7 is simply the result of occult experience. Just as the scientist observes and counts the 7 colors, so does the spiritual investigator count 7 consecutive conditions in the world's evolution. And because the wisdom of the world always knew about these things and expressed them, they passed over into common consciousness, and the number 7 was found to be of a particular significance. Exactly because the number 7 was founded in cosmic relationships, it passed over into common belief, and of course also into superstition. If we remember what has been said concerning the secret of the 7 trumpets, the 7 seals, the 7 letters, and what has been said concerning the 7 consecutive ages of the Atlantean epoch, we see that in the evolution of the world there are really consecutive periods which are repeated in conformity with the number 7. We shall now give an outline of cosmic evolution, showing that this number governs all its parts. We have heard that the earth, before it was earth, was moon. Before it was moon, it was sun planet, and before it was sun, it was Saturn. After the earth condition, it will pass over into the Jupiter condition, and then into the Venus condition, and lastly into the Vulcan condition, so that we have 7 consecutive planetary embodiments of our earth: Saturn, sun, moon, earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan. Now these are the greatest divisions in our whole evolution, which, with spiritual vision, we are able to survey to a certain extent. We have described the three preceding conditions of the earth. We shall now try to understand the purpose of this whole evolution and why the earth passes through these seven conditions. These seven conditions coincide with the development of human consciousness. Each of these conditions, Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan, characterizes a definite condition of man's consciousness. Let us turn our attention back to the ancient Saturn period. We know that the various parts of which man is now constituted did not exist at that time, but only the very beginnings of his physical body. Obviously, these first rudiments could not develop such a consciousness as man has today. Other beings had a human consciousness, but at that time the present man had a consciousness such as the minerals now have on the physical plane. We call this a deep trance consciousness. The first germ of man had this consciousness upon Saturn. This Saturn evolution was gone through in order that man might gradually rise to higher states of consciousness. That was the first stage of consciousness, the deep trance consciousness. Of course, it must not be imagined that the degree of consciousness remained the same throughout the whole of the Saturn period, but on the whole, the consciousness of man upon Saturn may be characterized as a deep trance consciousness. It is dimmer, even, than the consciousness which man has today in dreamless sleep, for that was then the consciousness he passed through at the second stage, during the Sun evolution. This is the consciousness now possessed by the plants around us in the physical world. Then came the Moon stage of evolution. Man then possessed a consciousness which can be understood more easily because in dream consciousness man has at least a last remnant of the Moon consciousness. Today this dream consciousness is an intermediate condition between dreamless sleep and the ordinary waking, clear day consciousness. Thus the third stage of consciousness was reached on the Moon, and it may be compared with the present dream-filled sleep. But it was much more vivid and real. Dream-filled sleep yields a consciousness which consists of odds and ends of ideas and pictures and is but slightly related to the real external world. The Moon consciousness, which was a consciousness of dream pictures, had very significant relations with the outer world. It corresponded exactly to what was present in the soul spiritual environment. There was a repetition of this during the Atlantean epoch. We call it the dream picture consciousness. It might also be called the somnambulic consciousness. The fourth state of consciousness is reached and passed through on our earth. It is what we call the clear day consciousness, or object consciousness. During the Jupiter period, man will rise to a still higher degree of consciousness of which most people today have no inkling, when all that we have described has taken place, and all that is yet to be added from the Apocalypse of John, which is still to be described. Then, when man is saved, so to speak, when he has risen from the abyss or escaped from decadence, when he has risen into the astralized and spiritual earth, this will be the foundation for his attainment upon Jupiter of the consciousness which we may call the conscious picture consciousness. If this is to be described, it can only be done from the experiences of the initiates, for initiation is indeed nothing but the acquisition of the capacity to attain at an earlier stage of evolution what normal mankind will gain at a later stage. In the conscious picture consciousness, man is just as conscious of himself as he is today from morning to evening, but he perceives not only the external objects. In his soul's field of vision, he has pictures, pictures which are by no means dim, but rather are incorporated in the clear consciousness of day. Thus the clear day consciousness plus the Moon consciousness gives the Jupiter consciousness. Man keeps what he now has, and in addition, gains the capacity of perceiving the element of soul and spirit. Today, the initiate not only sees man as he is physically, but shining around him he perceives all kinds of spiritual forms, which are the expression of his desires, instincts, and thoughts. In a word, his aura. It glows and sparkles around man's form like delicate flames, partly like a cloud of light. All this can be seen in man's astral body by the initiate, just as the outline of the physical body is seen by the ordinary physical eyes. All this is a picture of what takes place in the soul. The initiate experiences a consciousness which may be described as moon consciousness plus earth consciousness. Then upon Venus comes a sixth condition of consciousness, which may be described as the inspired consciousness, the consciousness of inspiration. It is called the consciousness of inspiration because at this stage of consciousness, the initiate perceives not only the feelings, urges, passions, etc. of the soul, but also its whole inner character as a uniform sound. He begins to perceive what pervades the world of, shall we say, color and form structures as the music of the spheres, so that each single being seems like a musical form within what had previously been perceived as an astral picture. The seventh condition of consciousness, which will exist on Vulcan, we may call the intuitive consciousness. Intuition is not the triviality ordinarily understood by the word today, when one imagines one is able to divine something through a vague feeling. That is a misuse of the word. In the schools of the initiates, initiation is applied to the highest stage of consciousness we can imagine, when the soul identifies itself with the spiritual beings and lives within them. Although the soul remains quite individual, it rests within all the objects and beings of its field of vision. The seven stages of the Earth's whole evolution thus present to us seven consecutive conditions of consciousness. Now, each of these must in its turn also be attained in seven stages, and we call these seven stages, which must be passed through every time, conditions of life. So that we may distinguish seven conditions of consciousness, and in each of these seven conditions of life. It is difficult in our language to find words to express these seven conditions of life. If we merely take our earth into account, we may describe the conditions of life by speaking of the seven kingdoms, for the conditions of life on earth coincide with the seven kingdoms. Here we may describe the first condition of life as the first elementary kingdom, the second as the second, the third as the third elementary kingdom, the fourth as the mineral kingdom, the fifth as the plant kingdom, the sixth as the animal kingdom, and the seventh as the human kingdom. Now, we might say that in each condition of consciousness, seven such conditions of life, or seven kingdoms, are passed through. But if we were similarly to describe the seven conditions of life on Saturn as the first, second, and third elementary kingdoms, as mineral, plant, animal, and human kingdoms, this would only give rise to false conceptions, for the expressions for these kingdoms are coined in accordance with our earthly experiences. And in those primeval times, the kingdoms were formed quite differently from what they now are on the earth. We can only say that analogous to these kingdoms, there were seven kingdoms on Saturn and seven on the Sun. The seven kingdoms of the Moon were more like the present kingdoms, and as far as the seven conditions of life on the Earth are concerned, these have become the seven kingdoms of the Earth. And on the Earth we can indeed describe these more easily, although it is extremely difficult to give an idea of the three elementary kingdoms. People think they have a true conception of the mineral, plant, animal, and human kingdoms, though this is not really the case. Perhaps you will succeed in forming some kind of idea of the three elementary kingdoms if you consider the following. Imagine parts of the mineral kingdom, stones, metals, and so on, becoming finer and finer, so that you see less and less of them. They dissolve, so to speak, into finer and finer substance. Suppose it all evaporates into an extremely delicate, transparent, invisible substance. If you continually refined these substances, you would at length produce something which is no longer a mineral kingdom, but the third elementary kingdom. Then we should rise to the second and the first elementary kingdom. It is difficult for our present qualities of perception to form ideas about these kingdoms which are secreted and condensed into our world. It is as if these elementary kingdoms had condensed and disappeared, so to speak, into our world. They precede our mineral kingdom. We have seen when this mineral kingdom itself was formed. In earlier periods of the earth's condition, the mineral kingdom existed in the condition of the elementary kingdoms. Now, the other four kingdoms. We see the mineral kingdom around us, also the plant, animal, and human kingdoms. But we must clearly understand that these designations are really not quite correct in the spiritual scientific sense. The layman describes the present minerals as belonging to the mineral kingdom, as plants as belonging to the plant kingdom, the animals as belonging to the animal kingdom, and man to the human kingdom. From the lay point of view, this is correct, and for all the trivial things of life, it suffices. But in the occult sense, it is incorrect. For at the present time, man is perfected alone in the mineral kingdom. Only in future periods of evolution will he rise to the plant, animal, and human kingdoms. As man has an ego consciousness at the present time, we may certainly call him human, but we must not yet say that he is incarnated in the human kingdom in the sense of spiritual science. To this end, something else is necessary, of which we must now speak. What can man comprehend today? That is the point. He can today understand only the mineral kingdom. As soon as he comes to the plant kingdom, he no longer understands it. The mineral kingdom he can understand. From the forces of the mineral kingdom, he can construct houses, machines, and so on. When he comes to learn in the same way, to observe what the forces are in a plant which make it grow tall, only this will lift him with his consciousness into the plant kingdom. And by learning to comprehend how an animal can feel, at the present time he has only an external view of it, he becomes a member of the animal kingdom. And when he understands not only his own ego, but that of another, when inwardly he fully understands another man, then only does he belong to the human kingdom. You'll best understand that man can today comprehend only the mineral kingdom if you make the following observation. Imagine a great number of learned men say that plants and animals are nothing more than complicated minerals, and these learned men are expecting a time when they will so combine material substances that these will become plants and animals. They are under the illusion that one can understand the plants as mineral beings, because they have no idea that there is anything else besides the mineral kingdom. Indeed, many say, you anthroposophists dream that there is an etheric body, something which extends beyond the merely mineral. But you will dream no more when we succeed in making a living being in our laboratory from carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, hydrogen, etc., just as we now produce sulfuric acid from the separate substances. It is believed that a living being can be produced. It is believed that purely materialistic science will one day be able to do this. It is believed that anthroposophists are foolish enough to doubt that the time will come when plants will actually be produced in the retort. This time will come. But students of spiritual science have always known that this time will come. They know that the time will come when man will take planthood into his own being, just as he now has the mineral kingdom within him. And just as he builds houses of minerals, just as he now uses the forces of the mineral kingdom, so will he in the future, out of the familiar forces of the plant kingdom, produce plant forms and still higher things in the laboratory, without resorting to seeds, without having to call to his aid forces of nature unfamiliar to him. But if this possibility of producing a living organism in the laboratory were to come prematurely, from the point of view of true spiritual science, this is what would be called black magic. Man must first become ripe for each succeeding step of evolution. There is an occult saying which runs, "Man will only produce living organisms in the experimental laboratory, as he now produces mineral products, when the laboratory table has become the altar, and the mixing of the chemical substances a sacramental act." This is a saying which has always been found in occult circles. Truly, as long as a person enters the laboratory in the belief that he can work with unholy feelings, the same as with holy ones, so long will he never be able, with the will of those who guide evolution in the right way, to produce anything living in the laboratory. This will only be possible when it is realized that a mineral product may indeed be produced, even if a scoundrel is standing at the laboratory table, but that a living thing can never be produced under these circumstances. For into the living being flows, when it is put together, something which is in the man himself. If the man were a villain, what was villainous would flow across, and the being produced would be an expression of villainy. Only when it is realized that man as a whole being works with his whole inner being in what he produces, will the world be ready to produce something that is alive, plants, animals, and human beings, in free activity. Man will then have risen into the plant kingdom when he understands the plant nature as he now understands the mineral. He will have risen to the animal kingdom when he understands feelings in such a way that he can make a sensitive being through his own spirit power, just as he now makes an external object. And he will have ascended to the animal kingdom when he can form man anew in free activity. Thus man is now living in the mineral kingdom, and he is fundamentally the only being which has developed fully in the mineral kingdom, whilst the beings in the other kingdoms stand in many respects at much lower stages than the one designated in spiritual science as the mineral kingdom. Thus, the plants show as a kind of preparatory stage what man will experience when he himself shall, one day, be in the plant kingdom. But the plants are not really in the plant kingdom. They are, at the most, prototypes, not archetypes, but pointers to a future kingdom in which man will be when he inwardly passes through the plant nature, just as he is now passing through the mineral nature. This plant kingdom in which man will be distinguished by other things. Its nature may be characterized by a moral statement, which is indeed often repeated intellectually, but by no means comprehended. Today man lives in such a way that the individual, even if he does not acknowledge it, is convinced that it is possible for a person to be happy although his neighbor may be unhappy. It is certainly quite possible today for one person to feel happy in spite of others being unhappy. Even if it be acknowledged on an intellectual level that the highest moral principle is one which makes all men happy, in practice people are convinced that the happiness of one is quite possible without others being just as happy as he. When man is in the plant kingdom, he will have reached a stage of evolution, morally, at which it will be impossible to feel happy as an individual if others of his kind are unhappy. The happiness of the individual is inseparably connected with the happiness of all. This statement will rule when man is taken up into the plant kingdom. No man could then feel happy in any way if his happiness were greater than that of others. Thus you see there is very little possibility of perceiving such subtle ideas as we must have in spiritual science if we wish to understand everything. But you also see that man still has long vistas of evolution in front of him. All this he must attain, and very little of it exists as yet. Thus we speak of seven kingdoms through which man himself passes. Upon Jupiter there will be again seven kingdoms, which will still be somewhat similar to the seven earth kingdoms, but they will nevertheless be quite different from these. Upon Venus there will again be seven, and again upon Vulcan. Here we can by no means call them kingdoms any longer. The idea kingdom is no longer available. Let me read that sentence again. Here we can by no means call them kingdoms any longer. The idea kingdom is no longer suitable. If we bear all this in mind, we must say that we have to start with seven stages of development of consciousness, the Saturn, Sun, Moon, Earth, Jupiter, Venus, and Vulcan stages. And in each condition of consciousness, seven conditions of life, through which every single being which goes through the degrees of consciousness must pass. Each condition of life must again pass through seven stages of form, in such a way that you have to consider your present physical condition of form to be in the very middle. Before something becomes physical, it is astral. Before it is astral, it is at a certain spiritual stage which is called lower devakan, and therefore anything descends, and before anything descends to this stage, it is in a higher stage of devakan. Here we have three conditions of form. The first may be designated as formless. The next condition of form we designate as the stage of lower devakan. Then we come to the astral condition. When the astral condenses, it becomes physical. Then the physical dissolves again and returns to a more perfect astral. This passes to a more perfect lower devakonic form, and this to a higher devakonic form. The physical condition of form is in the middle. Each kingdom passes through seven conditions of form. You must distinguish between physical and mineral, for they are not the same. As today, the physical coincides with the mineral in appearance, the two may easily be confused. The mineral kingdom passes through all the conditions of form. It can be laid down as mineral kingdom up in the higher region of Devakan. It then descends into the lower spiritual region and is still the mineral kingdom. Then into the astral. Here it is astrally prepared, and then it condenses to the physical. Thus in each kingdom we have seven conditions of form, and there is a pull-out diagram at the end of the book. Actually, perhaps not in this edition. Each condition of consciousness can only run its course in seven conditions of life. Each condition of life in seven conditions of form. That is seven times seven times seven conditions. In fact, an entire evolution, such as that of our Earth, passes through seven times seven times seven conditions of form. Our Earth was once Saturn. This went through seven conditions of life, and each condition of life through seven conditions of form. Therefore you have 49 conditions of form upon Saturn, 49 upon Sun, 49 upon the Moon, etc. 7 times 49 equals 343 conditions of form. Man passed through 343 conditions of form in the course of his evolution. When Saturn was at the very outset of its evolution, he began in the highest spiritual realm to which we can attain, as a structure in the highest part of Devakan. That was the first condition of form. It was entirely mineral. Man descended as such a being down to the physical and reascended to higher Devakan. And here begins the great difficulty. For you would now have to say, if you wished to use the expression named, man passes into the next kingdom, but these expressions do not apply to Saturn. Upon Saturn, man passes in this way through 49 conditions. The curious thing is that you may now ask, man had to pass through conditions of life on Saturn, but he only acquired an etheric body on the Sun. How then can one say that he goes through conditions of life? They were not yet as they were later, when he had a life body. They were vicarious. This is brought about through the activity of higher beings. Man has no independent life upon Saturn, but higher beings permeate him with their etheric body, with their astral body, ego, and so on. In any case, you must understand that upon Saturn, man has passed through 49 conditions, upon the Sun 49 conditions, and 49 upon the Moon. Upon the Earth, of these 49 conditions, he has only passed through the first three conditions of life, and is now in the fourth, in the mineral kingdom. In the first condition of life, he was in the first elementary kingdom, and there passed through seven conditions of form. In the second condition of life, he was in the second elementary kingdom, and passed through seven conditions of form. He was in the third elementary kingdom, and passed through the seven conditions of form. He is now in the fourth elementary kingdom, which is the same as the mineral kingdom, and he is approximately in the middle of this, somewhat beyond the middle. From all that we have outlined, you will have seen that the whole earth passes through 343 conditions. I beg you to picture it in this way. Saturn originates and passes through 49 conditions. It is at first a fiery mass, a body of heat, and goes through various conditions. But it is always the same sphere that passes through these 49 conditions. In the same way, the Sun is always one and the same sphere, which passes through the 49 conditions. But there are intermediate conditions. It is as if, between the several embodiments of the Earth, there were a kind of spiritual interval. It is the same with the planet as with man. The planets also pass through spiritual intervals, which lie between these conditions. If you clearly understand that in the course of our evolution we have seven conditions of consciousness, you will also perceive how this is connected with what is described in various theosophical books. They are cosmic systems. You will there read that our Earth developed out of an ancient planetary system which is described as Moon. One would then have to go further back from the Moon to the Sun, and from the Sun to Saturn. Each of these conditions is divided into the seven conditions of life, usually called rounds. Rounds are the same as conditions of life. And those now called conditions of form were formerly called globes. The latter expression is extremely misleading, for it leads to the idea that these seven globes are side by side. These conditions, from the most remote form, which was almost formless, down to the physical and up again to the formless, are not seven globes existing side by side, but seven successive conditions. The same globe that is now physical was first of all spiritual. Then it became denser and denser. It is the same globe, simply condensed. Then a portion of it became astral. Then a portion physical. It is always the same globe. It dissolves again like salt in warm water. It again becomes astral. Thus we have ascended to this astral stage, where in the apocalypse the vials of wrath are described. There the earth becomes astral again. Thus you see how the number seven governs the whole of evolution. In the last few days, we have given a skeleton outline of this, as it were, in the form of pictures, sometimes truly grotesque pictures, and in any case, such as deviate very much from what can be seen today in the physical world. If you conceive of it in this way, it is approximately as if you were to erect the scaffolding of a house. For the most external part, that is intended to be used by the masons. It is as yet nothing to do with the actual subject. They are only thoughts about the subject, so to speak. We must rise from this purely intellectual scheme, which assists us indeed to understand, to the living structure, by using the pictures which are to be seen in the astral for the various conditions. Then only have we what is called occult wisdom. As long as you build up a scaffolding, you remain in the thought realm customary to you in the physical world. The whole scheme we have sketched is only physical thought. This is related to the full reality, not even like the inner framework of a house to the complete building, but only like the outer scaffolding upon which the builders stand. This has to be taken down again when the building is completed. In the same way, the scaffolding of thought has to be taken down again if one wishes to have the truth before one as it really is. If one considers this abstraction as the reality, then one is not by any means speaking of true occultism, but only of the concept which the man of the present day can form regarding the spiritual facts. The way in which spiritual facts are presented abstractly at the present time may be seen in such a scheme, which in itself is unfruitful. I had to put it before you, because we also need such a scheme, but fundamentally it is of no use to one who wishes to progress upon the truly occult path. If you describe the whole world up to the highest spiritual facts by means of such schemes, this only has meaning for your present incarnation. In the next you would have to learn it all over again. This can only be thought by using the brain. It is only adapted for the brain. But as the brain disintegrates at death, the whole schematic presentation then falls to pieces. On the other hand, if you comprehend at first in imaginative pictures what really happens, what we have described as the consecutive pictures of the seals seen by spiritual vision, that is something which is not bound up with your physical brain, and which you retain after death, because it does not originate from physical thinking, but from facts seen clairvoyantly. Therefore one must take care not to mistake for real occult wisdom what is striven for after the pattern of physical comprehension, which wants to standardize the higher worlds. This is a description by means of the ordinary physical intellect. Of course, the physical intellect must play a part. On this account, it is useful to present such a scheme, and we may now carry it a step further. We have seen that we pass through 343 conditions. Now the subject grows even more complicated when we learn that the matter does not end here, but that man must also pass through various conditions within each condition of form. Three conditions of form have preceded the present physical condition of form, and three others will follow it. But now the physical again passes through seven conditions, and these are the seven of which we have spoken in previous lectures. The first, when the sun is still united with the earth. The second, when it separates. The third, when the moon withdraws. The fourth, that of Atlantean mankind. Atlantean man lives in the fourth epoch of the development of the physical condition of form. Thus, within each condition of form, you have, again, seven so-called race conditions, although the expression race only applies to the middle of our conditions. We are now living in the fifth condition, the post-Atlantean epoch, between the great Atlantean flood and the great war of all against all. This is the period in which we are living. The sixth will follow this, and then the seventh. The sixth epoch is indicated in the Apocalypse of John by the seven seals, and the seventh epoch by the seven trumpets. Then it passes over into the astral. That is a new condition of form, which again will have seven conditions. And still our scheme is not at an end. Each condition, as it runs its course, between such events as the great Atlantean flood and the great war of all against all, must again be divided into seven conditions. As regards the fifth epoch, there are the Indian Age of Culture, the Persian Age of Culture, the Chaldean, Babylonian, Assyrian, Egyptian, Jewish Age, the Greco-Latin Age, our own age, and the sixth, which is indicated in the Apocalypse by the community of Philadelphia, and the seventh Age of Culture, which will follow that. Thus, if we imagine the whole of evolution consisting of many, many such small conditions, which nevertheless are long enough, we have 7 times 7 times 7 times 7 times 7, or 7 to the 5th, I'm going to say, stages of development, such as the ancient Indian or the ancient Persian. Man passes through so many different conditions of this nature between Saturn and Vulcan. 7 times 7 times 7 equals 343. Then 7 times 343 is 2,401. And then 7 times 2,401 is 16,807. 16807. Thus you see how the number 7 governs development in the successive periods throughout the whole of evolution. Just as the tones in music progress from octave to octave, so does the whole of evolution take place in octaves of development. Let us now recall that we have 7 of these conditions out of the 16,807 in our epoch between the Great Atlantean Flood and the Great War of All Against All, and that previously we had 7 more in the Atlantean epoch. But we also remember that man went through 4 of these 7 ages of the Atlantean epoch under quite different conditions from the last 3. We now know the kind of condition we have to enumerate. 4 of the conditions out of the total number man went through during the Atlantean epoch in such a way that he felt himself as a group soul, as we have described, as eagle, lion, bull, and man. He gradually developed these 4 group souls during these 4 fundamental races of the Atlantean epoch. Now, because races always continue, just as, for instance, the Indian has continued, although later ones have developed, parenthesis, they pass into one another, close parenthesis. For this reason, the 4 heads indicating the group souls at the beginning of the 5th age of Atlantean civilization also remained, and we have this four-headed beast. Now, when man began to harden himself from the etheric into the physical, he developed 4 different parts of the body in accordance with his fourfold group soul. And through the former group soul consciousness changing into the individual consciousness, man had within him, at the beginning of the 5th age of Atlantis, a conjunction of the earlier fourfoldness. He bears within him the 4 heads, which are summed up in his head, which gradually arises. It is composed of the 4 group heads as it develops in the course of the 5th period. Man has 4 parts of the physical body corresponding to the 4 heads. These are the 4 quote-unquote horns. So that you may imagine that because man was etheric, he had 4 heads, 4 animal heads. Only the last is already man-animal, for that is what is meant. He was four-headed. And each force system corresponding to one of these heads formed physical organs. We saw in our last lecture that there was a force system which formed the heart, namely the one connected with the lion head. The various organs of man are like condensations of the corresponding members of the etheric body. This is the view of the writer of the Apocalypse. He says, that which is physical is a densification of the etheric. Just as you would think, this skin thickens to form a callosity, so the apocalyptist thinks. Man exists etherically, and this condenses and becomes physical. And because man is fourfold, consisting of four group souls, four such condensations are formed. These constitute his physical body. This is the reason why one described as horn, what in the physical body corresponds to the etheric body. Horn is a callous thickening. Man is described, as far as he had developed in the fourth age of the Atlantean epoch, as an animal with four heads and four horns. He then evolves further toward the individual human being. This begins in the neighborhood of the present Ireland. Man passes through the last three ages in such a way that he possesses the germ of the ego being. He no longer develops an animal body outwardly, but has risen to become human. He matures his human nature more and more, until he absorbs the Christ principle. If we regard present-day man, we see that he was not always as he appears today. In order for him to become what he now is, he had to pass through four animal group souls. He had to be incarnated in bodies corresponding to the present lion form, the bull form, the eagle form, and the human form. He then rose higher and became more and more human, and the form of the earlier group soul disappeared. It is no longer there. Man has assumed human shape. We must now understand an important event which then took place when man assumed human form. For without this understanding, one cannot comprehend the apocalypse of John. It was an event of the greatest importance. Up to this event, when man passed into human soul nature, something was totally hidden from his vision, which later was revealed. Man had a kind of dim, hazy consciousness. When he awoke in the morning, he saw everything surrounded by misty formations, so to speak, and when he went to sleep, he was in the spiritual world. This appeared to him in pictures, for such is the nature of the spiritual world. I shall now describe something which took place before man passed over physically into the human condition, before he passed from the group soul nature to full ego consciousness. What he lived through here upon earth consisted only of a number of experiences. He then went to sleep, and during his sleep was in a dim consciousness in a spiritual world where he lived among gods and spirits, of which an echo remains in the myths and legends. There he experienced mighty pictures. For example, the picture in which he encountered two other beings who threw stones behind them, and out of these stones other beings, like themselves, grew out of the earth. These were experiences which man had throughout the fourth age of the Atlantean epoch. To express it plainly, we must say that the reproduction of man took place in sleeping consciousness, not in waking consciousness. When man was outside his physical body and in the spiritual world, he set in motion, as it were, while he was in this state of consciousness, in which everything appeared to him in pictures, whatever had to take place for reproduction. The whole act of reproduction was veiled in a spiritual element, and appeared to him in the picture of throwing stones behind him. The act of reproduction was enveloped in spiritual consciousness. It lay behind the day consciousness. Man had no knowledge of sex. In the day consciousness, he did not see himself as existing in two sexes. His soul was untouched by any thought of sex. Not that it did not exist. It did exist. But it rested in the obscurity of a spiritual consciousness. During the day consciousness, man knew nothing of it. With the acquisition of the first germ of ego consciousness, man first became aware of sex. That is the moment presented to us in the Bible when Adam and Eve become aware that there is such a thing as sex. This important event took place at this stage in the earth's evolution. If with spiritual vision you look back to the time which preceded that time, you see only that part of man which is the instrument of the Spirit. All the rest was invisible. Only the upper part of man could be seen. From the point of time we have mentioned, the whole man began to be seen. It is now comprehensible why men began to cover themselves up. Previously they saw nothing which required covering. In this way man gradually emerged into the external world. If we regard the outer human form as the condensed part of the etheric, we have in the fourth Atlantean age the four horns in addition to the four group soul heads. Now, however, in the last three ages of Atlantis, something twofold begins to develop physically. At each stage where a group soul head was to develop, a double physical male and female was formed. In the first four stages, you find man formed with four heads, the condensed etheric with four horns. We now have three more heads, which are invisible because the external human form absorbs them. These three are only perceptible to clairvoyant vision, three etheric heads, the principal human heads. And in between them, two others, which are like shadows beside each, like double shadows. Thus, when the Atlantean flood burst, we have seven race or group soul heads, of which the last three always appear in such a way that they have their physical part in a double form as male and female. From this you see that at the end of the Atlantean epoch, the entire group soul nature of man, although the later portion remains invisible, has seven heads and 10 horns. The horns of the first four heads are not separated into male and female, but only the last three. Man has the seven heads and 10 horns within him. He must now work upon these through the reception of the Christ principle, so that they shall be destroyed, so to speak. For each time a man dies, the seven-headed and 10-horned nature can clearly be seen in his astral body. This is merely held together like a piece of India rubber, which has been correspondingly formed. Now suppose a person hardened himself during our epoch against the Christ principle, and were to come to the time of the great war of all against all, without having had the Christ experience. Suppose he were to come to this time and had thrust the Christ away from him. Then when the earth passes over into the astral, whatever was there, and which he ought to have changed, would spring forth. It would spring forth in its old form. The beast with the seven heads and 10 horns would appear. Whereas in those who have received the Christ principle, sexuality will again be overcome. The hardened ones will keep the six-horned sexuality, and will appear in their totality as the beast with the seven heads and 10 horns, of which the rudiments were laid down in the Atlantean epoch. They can be transformed through the reception of the Christ impulse. But if Christ is rejected, they will remain and will reappear in the period indicated by the pouring out of the vials of wrath and the earth splitting, as it were, into two parts, one in which the Christ men appear with white garments as the elect, already in the epoch of the seals, and the other part in which men appear in the form of the beast with seven heads and 10 horns. Then appears also another beast with two horns, symbolized by the number 666. The end of Lecture 10.